Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Brenda?
Good. I'm glad to have you here. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Fred Griffin. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Silas and Ward Financial Group. Silas and Ward Financial Group is a retirement and insurance firm led by Mr. Griffin and his wife, Joanne Griffin. The husband and wife lead team design strategies to help individuals reach their retirement and legacy goals. The couple have extensive entrepreneurial and corporate America leadership experience, allowing them to provide families with efficient tax strategies and financial solutions. Their goal is to help us to live the lifestyle we want to live, not the lifestyle that we have to live. Their biggest goal or joy is not only making a difference in our current lives, but also in the lives of our legacies and our loved ones. So let's again welcome Mr. Griffin. First question, where did you come up with the name Silas and Ward Financial Group? What inspired that?
That's an excellent question, Brenda. Silas is my great great grandfather, Silas Griffin, who was a Civil War veteran. Actually, if you're here in D.C., I know some of your listeners may be outside of D.C., but here in the D.C. area, if you go down to U Street, there's at the Negro Museum, Civil War
Yes.
Museum. Silas's name is on the plaque, and the reason why, because he fought in the 55th Infantry and during the Civil War. So I was always, once I knew that, I was always very proud of him because that meant that either he was a free slave, or he became free. And so the fight in the Civil War, either way, it inspired me to always think about myself in terms of being free. And his son, Ward, actually it was my great grandfather. His son Ward, which is my father's father, my father was named Edward Griffin. Ward used to always tell us, and he didn't live a long life. He died when I was 7. But one of the things that I remember Ward always telling us is that is better to own a popcorn stand than to work for the man. And so that type of mindset, and he was a railroad worker, but he was a side entrepreneur also. I mean, he so and my father was a contractor. My uncle was a commercial real estate developer. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri, and my uncle was the first African American commercial real estate developer doing community development corporations, CDC type of projects with churches building homes, multi-family homes. So I was able to be around, I know a lot of the media has a lot of bad rap on African American men, on Black men. But thankfully, I came from a family, a household, a community where I saw men taking care of business. And I wanted to be able to carry the torch and carry the mantle to be free, to be independent, to be free, to be, I'm sorry about that, that's some of the imperfections that happens in live podcasts. But to be free, to be independent, to work with individuals, helping them generate wealth on my own. Long answer to a short question. That's the inspiration.
So you come from a long line of entrepreneurs.
Yes, I did. Yes,
So then what inspired you or what motivated you to work in the financial industry?
That's a short, long story also. I knew that I always when I went to college, I always knew that I wanted to do something. If I had to work for someone, I didn't want it to be a 9-to-5 salary type job. So I went to corporate America. I mean, I went to college. I ran track in college, actually ran track at Iowa State University, and so I was able to go to college on the track and field scholarship. And once I finished college, I knew that I wanted to be in a position that if I were going to work for someone, to at least be able to get salary plus commission, or either all commission. I knew that. I knew that because I knew that I didn't want anybody defining me by how much I was worth per hour or per year or per month. That just drove me crazy because all my life I've been taught and I've been trained by my or I've been taught and influenced by my ancestors, my father and his father and my uncles and my cousins. One of my cousins was a couple of years older than me, and he was one of the first people that I started doing entrepreneurial endeavors with, and that was cutting grass. And we cut grass, and we had our territory, all the houses on the block. And I was able to find out as young as 6 or 7 years old, because we were out there young, that man, I could have a lot of cash on me where the other kids weren't. And so that meant I had more candy than the other kids. That meant I was able to dress better than the other kids. That offered me a lot of freedom. And so from that, my mind was already established that I could not have a job that I would only be paid what was determined by a salary. Well, I was a pharmaceutical rep before I got into the financial industry. Mid-90s, there was a major layoff in the pharmaceutical and medical industry because of the healthcare reform. And from that, I had to redefine myself. And because there weren't any more jobs for a year or two in the medical industry. So opportunity came up to be in insurance and to be an insurance agent. One of my fraternity brothers, I'm a proud member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, and one of my fraternity brothers was also my insurance agent. And he asked me, he said, "Would out of a million things, no, he asked me this. He said, "Would you ever consider being in insurance?" And I took my answer to him was, I was unemployed at this time. I was looking for work, but I told him, I said, out of a million things, insurance would be last. And the reason why I said that is because I, like many, had a limited understanding and an impression and an idea of what insurance was. And but once I got into the industry, because a month or two later, I came back to him when I found I couldn't get a job. I was no longer marketable for that period of time. I said, "Hey, what about that insurance opportunity?" And he said, "It's still here." And he hired me. I was able to open and run an American Family Insurance Agency. American Family is not only the East Coast or the West Coast, but it's all over the South and the Midwest, some parts of the West up before you get to the coastal lines. And I was able to run a very, very, very successful agency. And it sparked my interest, my desire, because I was able to find out that insurance was more than what I understood to be. And from there, I said, "Okay, it's great. I'm doing well in insurance. I really want to get a little bit more savvy than I want to be able to do more than write somebody's home or write somebody insurance on somebody's car or write a little life insurance on them. I want to get into the aspect of finances and doing and helping people with taxes." Helping people with retirement, helping people invest their money for long term. And so from there, I left my insurance career, became a financial advisor with MetLife Security. And there I learned my world opened up into learning wealth strategies that was never shared with in my community. I didn't know anybody talking about some of the strategies that I learned. And from there I said, "Okay, I'm going to take these strategies that are really generated for the upper one percentile, and I'm going to work with the average family member, the average middle income or middle lower to middle income or even a higher middle income people to help them generate wealth. To preserve their money throughout their retirement and to pass on money to their generations. That's what I do now. And it's a passion for me, and I really enjoy doing it. I'm glad, kind of glad that my road to my career path ended the way it did. I try to come up with a few other things in between there, but and all of them I thank for my glory to God, I was successful at. But my passion really in what I'm doing right now.
And as a result of that, what do you find is your biggest challenge that people, or the biggest challenge that people are facing prohibiting them from retiring? People are actually staying on their jobs longer. What do you think? Why do you think that is?
Wow, you know, we have a lot of contenders. That's a great question. There's a lot of contenders against that challenges your you individuals meeting their retirement. I mean, there's a lot of contenders, especially in America. I mean, this is a country of so much wealth, and there's so much out there that tempts us to want to keep up with the Joneses. You know, we want the nicer house. I mean, the house that's okay is no longer okay. We go from the nicer, we go from a house that's okay to a bigger house, from a car that's okay to a bigger car. We go from the rings and jewelry that's okay, more expensive jewelry, and there's so much that's pending against our earning dollars. That's going after our earning, I mean our wealth creating potential that's stimulating. There's advertisement, there's things in the culture that's always telling us that we need more. And the more that we spend, the less we have available to for retirement and meet our goals at retirement. And by the time we wake up and realize what happened, sometimes it's almost too late.
And what do you think is the different, what's different about the retirement planning for this generation that we're in now? The what is it, the millenniums?
Right.
Then that about parents.
A few things are different. When our parents worked, most of them, if they had a job, most of them had pensions. You know, pensions were around, and that was very common. And a pension is a defined benefit, meaning that the employer invested the money for you. And they made sure that there was money that was invested for you, and that when you retired, there was money that you would be able to live off of. And now less than 26% of the companies out there have pensions. So that's a huge difference. And it's almost like a wake-up call, because we saw our parents, many of us, retire, and they retired successfully. They were able to have their pension, they were able to have Social Security that kicked in, and their bills were paid off, and they lived meager, they lived more meagerly also than we did. You know, many of the times they had one car, they didn't have the two cars plus the SUV, the three car garages that we have now. So they lived a lot more meager than we did. I mean, they had small, when you look at an old house, there's a little bitty closet in these old houses. And it was like maybe two of them. And the reason why, because they were washing ready clothes. I mean, they had one or two outfits they wore to work. They had one Sunday outfit. And so they lived on, and they had smaller refrigerators, because they were, and then they saved things downstairs because there was a larger or freezer. So they saved food. They saved food. They bought up things when money was plentiful. They, at the beginning of the month or whatever, they were able to load their freezers, and whenever they needed something, instead of like we do, whenever we need something, we go to the grocery store. Whenever they needed something, they were able to go downstairs to the freezer. And then grandma, amazingly, you would look at grandma and you would say, "How in the world did they have all these kids? I mean, all these grandkids, and we're never hungry because they stored up." And then you look at smaller families now. And you think, wow, how in the world do I have fewer members in my family, but I'm always struggling for my money? So there's a big difference. There's a cultural difference. There's a way that we handle money is different. There was pensions in play then that's not in play. So now you have to take control of, instead of depending upon the company set up your retirement, you have to proactively set up your own.
So, how do you suggest that one, and especially an adult, become financially literate?
Well, I think That's a good question. I'm gonna answer it the way you asked it, but I'm gonna add something to it. As you said, especially an adult, that would have been a setup. I could have knocked it out of the park if you just asked that question generically. I'm gonna answer the difficult question. That's like, which is an adult, because if you were to ask me starting with a child, then there's the easier answers. But I'm gonna ask that answer that way also. As an adult, like I said, it's a little bit more challenging because we've been taught all of our life, and our attitude about finances it's part of our DNA. It's who we are. It's ingrained in our mindset. So to change a habit in an adult, first of all, in order to reach your retirement goals, you have to be willing. You have to be open. You have to be open-minded. You need to go into it with, I'm willing, whatever I find out, and this is it, I'm willing to make the difference, the change. It's kind of like losing weight. So we gain weight by usually having bad habits. In order to lose the weight, if you really get tired of being overweight, you have to go into it with the mindset of whatever it takes. I'm going to have the mindset to do whatever it takes to change the habits. Same thing with finances. People want finances. They want their finance goals to happen presto, instant, just like their spending goals. Well, the reason why your retirement goals are not successful, because you want to do it with the same habit that has created them to be unsuccessful. So your spending habits, because you spend at will, you can't plan for retirement at will. You have to develop a plan, you have to create that plan, and you have to stick by the plan. Same way like losing weight.
And what are your thoughts about financial literacy for children? Because it's not taught in schools.
I think that's very important. I think, as we said, the coffee table at the kitchen table. First of all, again, parents have to wake up, because whatever the habits you have, those are the same habits your children are going to have. So you look at, so let's go back to diet again. You look at parents, and no parent birth a child wanting them to be unhealthy. No parent does. But if your eating habits are unhealthy, if you're sitting there, your habits are a lot of carbs, a lot of sugar, a lot of processed food, and your child is raised off of what you're eating, then that child is going to end up and have the same sicknesses and the same diseases that you have. So financial literacy, so like a diet, it has to start early and has it needs to start at home. Your kids, you can't expect your kids to have bad habits with food and eating and diet, and then go off to school and have a discipline. They have discipline. It has to start at home. Same with finances. The parents need to start, and they need to understand that even though we may have not always did the right thing, we need to make sure we need to start establishing, set up accounts for these kids. We need to let them know when they're if there's even a such thing anymore as task at home and getting paid for your task. But a percentage of the money that we give you, or the percentage of the money that you earn on your jobs, it needs to go in retirement. And if we start now as kids, letting those kids know the reward. If we start now as kids, then you'll have a lot more money to live on the rest of your life than we do. And the reason why I say than we do, because the generations now are living better than before, even though they may not be as disciplined than before. So these kids have almost a brat-like privilege of thinking that my parents are doing so well, so I'm going to do well also. Well, no, we need to teach them there's some responsibilities they have in this in order for their lives to be better than it is for even us now. It started early. Time is a friend.
So how does one generate generational wealth?
One, by starting early, setting money aside. If you set enough money aside, if you start setting money aside at a young enough age, and you start taking care of all the things at the times that you need to take care of them, when you get old enough, you know, your money is established, get the proper amount of life insurance. I mean, when you're young, you can get a lot more. You can be futuristic, because a lot of times single people don't look at it like, I don't need that much because I'm not married, I don't have any kids. Well, unless you plan not to be married and not have kids forever, that may be a good strategy. But many people end up some days probably getting married or having kids. I have a friend now that's planning their will. They're not married, they don't have kids, but they have a will and trust set up, because they're going to leave things not only for their siblings and their nieces and nephews, but for their friends. So there's never a reason why not to set up and establish a state, you know, the estate, a wealth planning or a legacy plan. I mean, organizations, even if you're a single person, there's probably a church that you like. If you're in a Greek organization, you probably love your Greek organization. You may want to leave them some money. You may want to leave the church some money. You have to be futuristic to the point to understand that you're a part of the community, and that your portion is a big portion, and that by you setting up generational wealth to leave for the future. I mean, I have a, you know, we did some work with Hampton University. I didn't go to Hampton University. I went to Iowa State University. But Hampton University, we did some work, some wealth planning work, and setting up, you know, coming together as a community, creating wealth. And so when I pass, Hampton University will get their, you know, they're a beneficiary of some of my money. So you have to start thinking like that. Now, you want to say, okay, well, why did you leave Hampton and not Iowa State? Iowa State's doing pretty well. You know, Iowa State's doing pretty well. There's a need for that community, for our community. HBCUs are doing pretty well too, but they can do a whole lot better if every one of us start thinking about the things in our community that we love, that we want to continue to exist. Those are the reasons why. Once you determine the reason why, then you'll be able to do the things and generate what to do and why to do it.
Okay, and how much do taxes impact wealth?
Great question. A lot of people don't think about that. You know, because they think about taxes, but taxes are taxes. No, it's not. You know, Capitol Hill is always fighting, you know, a marginal tax bracket. It starts, you know, it's going from 0 to now 39.6% at the highest tax bracket. You know, the more money you make, the more you tax. And I hear many people say, well, when I retire, I'm going to make less, and so therefore, I'll be taxed less. Well, that's not always true, because if you plan right, you may make more money in retirement. And secondly, that the tax bracket causes always a contention on what the tax bracket is. We don't know where it's going to be when we retire. In the early 1940s, it was as high as 85%. So if it happened in the early 40s, it can happen again today. So if you plan for retirement and you assume that your tax bracket is going to be at 20%, let's say, but it ends up being at 85%, beyond anything that you have control of, most of your money is being ate away by taxes. There's nothing you can do about it. So taxes are major. Planning for taxes, planning to generate tax-free income, planning to de generate tax-deferred income, and generating more tax, more money, and more wealth that you can, ha that you need to pay less in terms of taxes, either today and especially.
And at what age or when do you think that one should start planning retirement?
I think as soon as we start having money exchange. If you teach a kid, I remember when I was a kid, that same cousin that taught me how to create entrepreneurial income by cutting grass and washing cars and all that thing. That sounds menial, but that same kid, it was his father who's a commercial real estate developer. That same kid, when he was a teenager, owned houses. He bought houses. So, I mean, so his mindset, and he never worked for anyone. He never had a job working for anyone. He never went to college like I did. And so he started generating wealth in his mindset at his birth. It was in his mind to generate his own money. And then I guess somewhere along the line, probably because of the conversations they had at the kitchen table, he knew that if he generated and bought houses, then in the future he wouldn't need to go to work. And so I would say that you could generate wealth and start generating wealth from the beginning of birth. You know, my wife and I, we have great niece, great two great nephews. One's 3 months and the other's about to turn three. And so there are strategies that we're talking about putting on them, financial strategies that will be that tax-free for them. And by the time they get 45, 50 years old, they'll have enough tax-free money to live on to the rest of their life. I mean, it's a simple strategy. I mean, it's not a stock market strategy. It's not the most savvy strategy. It's simply through cash value life insurance. A lot of times people, when they think about insurance, if your mind is limited, you think that it's only something you can do when you die. But there's so many different savvy instruments even within that. And one is to be able to have tax-free income. And if you start it on a kid, that amount of what the amount the cost of doing it is so less, so much less, the amount of wealth they would generate will be so much more. And they'll be able to have tax-free money. That's just one strategy out of many strategies.
Well, this has been so very insightful. I thank you so much for interviewing with us or with me. How can someone get in touch with you?
Okay, my office is in Tyson Corner. My number is 703-597-2493. My email is fgriffin@silasandward.com. And my website is www.silasandward.com.
All right, thank you so much. And that information, guys, will be in the description so that you can get in touch with Mr. Griffin for insurance, finances,
Retirement planning.
retirement planning. Okay, so the information will be in the comments. Thank you so much once again for meeting with me and for sharing with our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brenda. I appreciate being on your show. Wish you much success.
Thank you.